Welcome to the Grand Hill Chronicles podcast. My name is Don Bishop, and I write as T.S. Pedramon. Today, I'm here with another fantasy author and actually another podcaster. Corinne Norton is here with me today. And Corinne, why don't we get to know you a little bit? How did you get into writing? What's your background? Education or whatever you want to share?
Well, thank you so much for having me on here. It's great to be able to talk with other authors. My background is not in writing. I actually went to school for nursing. I was a labor and delivery nurse for 12 years. And then I did photography for several years as well. I wrote a ton as a kid. And my third and fourth grade teachers actually told my parents I would be an author someday. But my parents are musicians, so they encouraged me to go the musician route. Which didn't happen either. So it's always been something I've done, but it wasn't until about 10 years ago. We were missionaries in Rwanda for a couple of years, and so we just didn't really have a lot of social life. And so I had a lot more time to invest in writing. And that's when I actually developed like the habits to be able to write, you know, as a business instead of just for fun. Like I had goals and the self-discipline to do it.
Yeah. And what's your musical instrument or instruments?
Oh, I used to play violin and sing, but I guess technically piano. I don't do any of it anymore.
I got my degree in music education.
Oh, okay.
And I went and taught for a year, and then I joined the Marines and played clarinet for them for about 7 years.
My dad plays clarinet.
Before I left the band. Clarinet Power?
Yeah.
I wanted to play violin when I went into sixth grade. I wanted to do music in school, and my mom's like, "All right, you're going to be in the band. What instrument are you going to play?" I'm like, "Well, violin. We have a violin at home. I could play that." I did not understand that the band did not use violins. Yeah. And my mom pointed that out. Like, you can't play the violin in the band.
Right.
And I read between the lines incorrectly, and I thought she was messaging like, band isn't an option for you because we don't have a band instrument that you can play. And so that my school didn't have an orchestra. I couldn't learn violin at school. It was not an option in my town. But the same year, my brother went into seventh grade, and we had just come off of homeschooling the year prior, which is why he didn't do this in sixth grade, because he wasn't in the public school. But in seventh grade, he joined band and he played percussion. And my parents bought him a Glockenspiel, also called a bell set, and a practice pad to practice his snare drums techniques on. And I'm like, oh, so like she was maybe willing to go and purchase an instrument for me. So the next year I joined band.
Nice. Yeah. Yeah. I probably would have done band, except my dad was the band teacher. And so I went the orchestra route so that I wasn't directly under him. Love my dad, but I didn't want to be in his class all the time.
Orchestra has a tone, like they're both good. They're both, see my monitor behind me turned off.
Oh, now we all know your code.
Yeah. As long as my kids don't. Because then they'll go and play games and watch stuff without permission. So band and orchestra, they both have wonderful things about them. The band has a tone that the orchestra doesn't. The orchestra has a tone that the band doesn't. And the band has the sound power, the sheer volume that an orchestra can't match. And the orchestra has this thickness of sound. The first time that I saw a live orchestra that I can remember was when I was in college. And like all the recordings I had ever heard just paled, you know, to be there live, it was so much better. So,
well, mine was always, you know, junior high quality orchestra. So I didn't hear a quality orchestra probably until I was an adult.
Although even. And junior high, The stringed instruments are inherently more approximate with pitch.
Mm-hmm.
So that some of those those junior high orchestras can be a little rough on the ears. Then again, in band, if you don't have a good embouchure, you don't have a good sound, and you don't have good intonation. And pitch is very approximate.
Yeah.
So, but, yeah. So you kind of always wrote, I guess. You said your elementary school teachers told your parents that you were going to be a writer.
I would write little short stories and things, but it was shortly after in nursing school, you can't do anything except nursing school. So then after I graduated, I suddenly had time to pursue interests, and I kind of had to decide, do I want to pursue photography or writing? And at the time, you know, we were about to have our first baby and money was tight, and photography, you could immediately make money doing that. Whereas writing, you never know if you're going to make money doing that. Yeah. And so I ended up pursuing photography first for a while. But I did still write while I was doing that. I just never invested enough time in it to stay in the world of my characters, to be able to write consistently and well until, we were in Rwanda. And then I had more time to do that.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, sorry. I had another question in my mind and it went away. So tell us about what you write, I guess we can, or what you read and how you came to write what you write. Probably influenced.
Yes and no. I actually probably read more science fiction, and I have written more science fiction, but I decided to start publishing fantasy first, because I feel like I had more friends to network with. And so I have a bunch of sci-fi books just kind of sitting and waiting for me to decide what to do with. But I did start with Blood of the Stars is my first book, my debut novel. It's epic fantasy. It's super thick. It's basically about these half-lights who are descendants of stars, and so they have magic in their blood. And the main character is living in an area with humans, and her blood is being taken from her and used for magic. And so it's kind of her coming out of this abusive situation, and then coming to a world where magic is a good thing, and she's kind of having to adjust her thought process on that. And then there's also, so she's one of the main characters. And then the other main character is a prince who saw her kidnapped as a child. They were both children, and he's been looking for her ever since. And so the story is kind of about how they eventually meet up and end up on similar journeys. And really her goal is to find her family and save her mother. So.
Okay. It reminds me a little bit of Stardust. You know, they're using the stars, they're taking advantage of the stars' physical bodies for their own purposes.
Yeah, I loved that movie, but I never got through the book.
Oh, I never read the book, but I also liked the movie.
Yeah.
Sounds like in Blood of the Stars, they're not killing them to do their, to take advantage of them.
No, they just take their blood. And that's what the bad people do. The good people are able to use their magic that's just inherently in them. And that's what they end up teaching her, is how to use her magic without actually pulling her blood to use it.
Touch. Keep that monitor behind me on. Got to display my. So is that, how many books do you have out so far? Is it the one?
So just the one full novel. Technically there's a novella that follows it. So when I structure my Kickstarters, I always have a novella that comes out midway between the novels. And I should say always, this is my first, but I have it planned out how I'm going to do it. Yeah. Yes. So I will have a novella that releases between each novel, partly because they're coming out a little over a year apart, because they're just so long for me to be able to write. And so that novella is kind of like, hey, I'm still here, still writing. And so that novella came out in August, but otherwise I just have some short stories out to kind of draw people into the world and that sort of thing.
Okay. And what's the word count of Blood of the Stars?
I think it was around 210,000.
Okay. That is, yeah, that is beefy.
It's a beast. And I had two editors look at it and I said, I'm not comfortable putting out a debut novel this long. Cause I think a lot of people see that and they're like, oh, there's so much fluff in there and she overwrote it. And so I was paranoid about it. And I was like, you guys need to cut this down. And they were like, no, we don't. So I just went ahead and did it. And you know, there's some people I think who it's slow even for me a little bit. It's a slower fantasy. There's definitely action scenes, but I'm very focused on character. And so I make sure that we get to know all these characters through the whole book. And so that's probably what makes it longer. And there was a few people in reviews who would say it's slower, but they said it's worth it if you know, stick with it because it all pays off in the end. So, yeah.
So for a reference point, I just Googled it. Elantris by Brandon Sanderson has 205,000 words. So it's similar to that.
Yeah.
It's Way Shy of Way of Kings is 384,000 words.
I mean, it's, I guess it could be considered average for epic fantasy, but it's twice as long as all the other stuff I've written. And it's just because the world is so big. It just kind of needs to be.
Yeah. Yeah. And so as far as like them, the editors not wanting to put out a book so long, and they said them saying it's like full of fluff.
No, they didn't. I was concerned people would feel like it was full of fluff. So I asked them to trim it down and they said, we can't trim it down. Everything that's in there needs to be in there. So that's why I ended up publishing it even at that length when it made me nervous.
Was there talk about possibly dividing it between two books?
No. So I'm a very firm believer that story structure needs to happen a certain way. And if you're dividing a book in two, you're usually losing the quality of your story structure unless you wrote it in a way that it probably should have been two books from the beginning. And I mean, I write my books, I plot and I outline. And so I have a very distinguished story structure. It's very intentional. And so if I tried splitting it in two, it would have broken and people would have just been super dissatisfied because if I ended at the midpoint, they'd be like, no, that's not a story, that's half a story.
yeah. And with my series, I hear you. Mine is not, is my first book is not that long. It's 94,000 words. Reference point, Harry Potter book one was 80,000 words. So 94,000 words is not long for epic fantasy, but it's a piece of the story that made sense to stop where it stopped.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it was. Like I didn't go into it with any word count goal.
Right.
Or I kind of guessed when I was a third way through, halfway through, I'd probably land somewhere around 80,000. And when my first draft finished at 80,000. And then as I addressed some missing pieces and added an epilogue, it grew up to 94.
Mm-hmm.
With my current book two, I am sprinting to finish it because I already have a launch day at the end of October.
Okay.
And my first draft isn't done yet. But I've been held back by a lot of things going on, and some of those things have gotten out of the way. One more is about to get out of the way. Our old house, we're selling it, and so it closes next week. And then full on, you know, just for the book. But I don't have a word count goal for it either.
Yeah.
I anticipate it being about 120,000 words, but that's just me guessing. Like I see where I have been and I see where it's going and it might be like that.
Yeah.
So yeah, power to you. Make the story structure is what rules, you know?
Yeah.
So your upcoming book, is it a sequel? Or is Blood of the Stars self-contained?
No, it's going to be a series of four books. So the next one coming out is book two. And it just continues on with the story. It's It's mostly resolved in book one, but there's definitely enough threads to make it clear that there's more to come.
Okay. Now, is it four books like The Wheel of Time was, or, you know, which turned out to be 14 books?
No, I have my four covers. I have them all outlined. It's not okay. Changing. So,
yeah, I don't have that detailed of planning done. I have large scale, I have the 30,000 foot view wave tops. Mm-hmm. And I know that this major event is going to happen and this major event is going to happen.
Yeah.
And so, like, at the end of book one, I knew that it had to be at least three books. Mm-hmm. Because there was this major plot point that was going to happen that wasn't the end, you know?
Yeah.
But I can tell you right now that it's going to be at least... at least five. Okay. I'm trying to think of maybe it still could be four. But anyway, I don't know how many books it's going to be. It's going to be as these big wave tops happen, and some of them are still clarifying themselves. Mm-hmm. They're not fully formed yet. And those big wave tops are the book finishing events, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah. Well, why don't you tell us more about your upcoming book?
Yeah. I mean, it can be hard to get into without spoiling.
Before we get into that, listeners, again, Corinne Norton has her own podcast. Look up Finding Fantasy Reads, and she shares short stories so you can find your next fantasy read. You can find authors. Oh, you know, I like that flavor of fantasy. So, okay. So tell us about your upcoming book.
So it's a sequel. So it kind of gets spoilery if I get into it too much. But basically the world has been divided, all the continents. It was one major continent that was broken apart and separated by barriers. And so it's very difficult to get across the barriers. And so
magical barriers.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And so there are star bridges, which are kind of like portals. And so they can cross, but they have to have the right star bridge to do it. And so in the first book, there's basically two continents that we're crossing. And then in the second book, they're going to go to a new land where there's creatures that are basically half fish, half people kind of thing. And so it's mm-hmm. kind of like a different world within the larger world. But again, they're still kind of on the larger quest to save her mother. But it's hard to get into it without spoiling stuff from the first book.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I hear that. Now you're running a Kickstarter for mm-hmm. it. And when does book two come out officially?
It'll come out on retailers in May. The Kickstarter backers will get the ebook in probably February, maybe January, and then the physical copies in March.
Okay. And I'm going to show your Kickstarter campaign page on the screen right now for anybody watching on YouTube. There it is. And you've got a lot of takers, a lot of people taking you up on this. So I guess book one was a good read and you got the word around pretty well.
Yeah, we are currently approaching kind of the total that my first campaign ended at. So that's been really encouraging to see how it grew from the first Kickstarter to the second. So, and it's Kickstarter is such a welcoming community. I love the readers in there. And it's nice because, you know, when you launch something on retailers, you don't hear from the readers unless they write a review or email you. And it's just kind of, there's more barriers to that. Whereas on Kickstarter, they can send you a message. I can send them a message. And so it's been great to just have these conversations with readers and have them tell me how excited they are to come back for book two and that sort of thing. So it's just such an encouraging process that makes the launch a lot more fun.
Yeah. And I'll show the I'll put the link to that, to your Kickstarter campaign in the show notes. So and I encourage listeners out there to check it out. What else should we know about book two other than that we should go and buy it?
Back to the campaign. The nice thing is I'm able to, with this Kickstarter, we're adding in more artwork, which is a lot of fun. You know, there's stretch goals in Kickstarters where you can kind of earn more things the more people back. And so last time around, I didn't include artwork because you have to wait for the artists to actually do the artwork, and that can kind of delay mm-hmm. the delivery of the book. But since I knew the book wasn't going to be coming out until later anyway, I went ahead and included some art commissions in this one. And so that's been fun to see people get excited about that. So, yeah.
Okay. And so you mentioned artwork. What other rewards are there for anybody who back? By the way, so people listening to this podcast, her campaign is ending soon.
September 24th, yeah.
Day of, yeah. So 24th is the end of the campaign.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's, you know, Kickstarters, they're meant to create urgency for people to buy the book during that time period. Mm-hmm. But I've decided to create like a late order on my website so that I can continue selling it, because I put a shop up on my website. And so now I sell the first book on my website as well. Because the difference is, like, for example, the ones you get through the Kickstarter, you can't get on retail. And so these ones have like super fancy foiling and color images. And so you can only get those through the ones that I'm ordering through my printer. Like if you order online, you get the more basic book. And so I like to be able to sell those on my website too. And so, you know, even if they go there after September 24th, they can still find the book. But what was your original question? I can't remember now.
What other rewards are you offering?
Oh, yeah. So they've earned artwork, they've earned character cards, they've earned, so like I said, I always do a novella. And so that's an extra ebook that they earned. So even though I publish it later, all the Kickstarter backers get it for free. They're probably going to earn stickers next. I feel like I'm forgetting something, but yeah, I like to do polls. Not every Kickstarter author does this, but so for the next stretch goal, I always have a poll running and there's four things that they can choose between. So that way, the majority rules and whatever is ahead when we hit that goal, that's the next thing that they earn. And so some people have a lot of fun with that, but I will say then it gets us through all of like the best goals first, because that's what mm-hmm. everybody's voting for. So at the end, there'll be, you know, like the Q&A session left over, which frankly, I don't mind if we don't do that, because then I have to awkwardly answer questions. Yeah. With people. So I'm fine if they don't earn that one. But yeah, it's been fun.
Yeah. Yeah. And Kickstarter is a lot of work. I ran a campaign at the start of this year.
Okay.
And I, ideally I would run it for each book, I think. But, as I mentioned before we hit record, I've had a lot of things, holding me back from, like, I'm behind schedule on book two. So I'm not running a Kickstarter campaign for this book. I would have liked to, but it's a load that I couldn't take on at this time.
I will say it does get easier. The first one was a lot of work and a lot of stress. And the second mm-hmm. one has been significantly easier. I mean, there's still a time investment, but it's definitely made me feel good about continuing to do it. I think each time it will get a little easier.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I think we've kind of talked about the Kickstarter, you know, as much detail as it, unless you want to share more, you're absolutely free to do this.
No, I mean, I've had some people ask me about mentoring, and I don't do that, but I highly recommend there's a Facebook group for any authors who are wanting to do Kickstarters. And it's like, you go there and mm-hmm. ask a question and you get the hive mind to answer, which is way better than a mentor anyway, because you get multiple perspectives. So, yeah, if people are wanting more information about Kickstarters, I recommend finding that group, and I can give you a link later if you want to post it. It's just a great resource for authors who want to do a Kickstarter.
I'll I'll put that in the show notes. I'm actually a member of that group myself, unless there's another one. But yeah, Kickstarter for Authors.
Yep.
Pretty straightforward.
Yeah.
Excuse me. Pretty straightforward group name.
Yeah.
But yeah. All right. Yeah, I guess we'll hit stop. Stick around after we stop the recording. And for our listeners again, where can they find you?
My website is just CorinneNorton.com. It's not an easy name, so you'll have to spell it out for them probably, but it's K-A-R-Y-N-E-N-O-R-T-O-N. But yeah, that's my website. And you can also find the podcast on there as well. My brother and I narrate the short stories on the podcast, and we also narrated my audio book. So that's kind of how that all connects.
Yeah. And I've got to say, I haven't heard your audiobooks, but the podcast, you do it well. It's good quality.
Thank you.
And it's a pleasant listen while I'm out like mowing the lawn or whatever, you know.
Mm-hmm. Good.
And you find some good short stories to share there.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. Well, for everyone out there in podcast land, we'll catch you next time on the Grand Hill Chronicles podcast.
Thanks again.